Brian Had a Dream, 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hi, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And you are listening to The Quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he watches 10,000 movies before he turns 40. This is the second part of our in-game episode, and this is our end episode. In this time we have together, we will chat about our thoughts and impressions, our top five moments from Avengers Endgame. We'll also talk to Brian about how it feels to have accomplished his lofty goal, watching 10,000 movies before he turns 40. Thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode, for sharing in this conversation with us, and for checking us out on Twitter at 10K Movies and on Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. Brian, let's jump right into it and get started. We saw Avengers Endgame at different times and in different places, but I think we had very similar reactions to it. What were your main thoughts and impressions with this movie?
I was incredibly pleased. It was, I don't think you can overstate what an achievement. I don't think we've seen anything like this before. We've seen franchises that have had multiple films. We've seen franchises maybe with more films. But we have not seen a franchise that tied so many threads together into one, for the most part, cohesive story. In that scope, in essence, is like an 11-year, 40-hour TV show. And it's so satisfying to finally come to the end and for it to feel as good as it did.
Yeah, I really agree with that word, satisfying. Not a word. I think I heard another podcast in reviewing Endgame maybe say this. Satisfying, not a word used often with the Marvel movies, in the sense that every single one until now has been building to this moment, even before they maybe knew they were actually building to this moment. But there was always something more to come. There was the battle with Thanos always looming, and that was not the case at the end of this movie. It just was ending, and also how rare that is in comic books. Comic book stories go on and on and on and on, but this movie really, really ended a lot of things in the cinematic universe.
Well, a lot of times you have special event comics that sort of have a finality to them, right?
Right, but then the next volume's coming, the next number of issues.
Well, sure, and we know that now, too. We know that Spider-Man Far From Home is right around the corner.
Right, but it's this one, had, as we get into the major spoilers for this episode, as we talk about consequences and endings of some characters and decisions made about some characters, that spoiler warning goes out now. But yeah, there is finality here that you don't find as often in the comics, too. With Captain America aging at the end and passing on his mantle to Sam, with obviously Tony's death, with Black Widow's death, just a lot of things that just give this, also because of the media format, I think, too. In comics, you can resurrect everybody. Harder to do in movies with actors who have contractual obligations that have ended, who want to move on, who themselves are getting older. I think it just all speaks to your point about, again, this was a very satisfying film, tied a lot of threads together, and I thought, like you said, did it very well, something that doesn't really have much precedent to it, and I just think overall it was really a magnificent film. Now, it wasn't without its flaws. There are some nits to pick, and we can get into those, but do you have any other comments just about maybe the achievement of this movie that you want to share?
I think we'll be talking for years about and I think there'll be books written at some point about the role that the people who shepherded all these movies into one cohesive vision played. Each movie did have its own cast and crew and sort of creative vision behind it, with each director sort of left their own stamp. And one of the criticisms of Marvel movies has been that they have reined in people from being able to make the characters their own, because they, you know, they as a corporate level were had decisions they were trying to do. But after watching this movie, you have to think, I would give them the benefit of the doubt, as opposed to the individual directors. I think, you know, they've been proven correct, that the real secret to this phenomenal success story is the insistence on one overall vision for each movie, and each movie has to be subservient to that vision. Like I said, there'll be books written about it, there'll be classes taught on how somebody, because this is something brand new. Even Star Wars couldn't pull off, and only wishes they could have pulled off, what Marvel has done, and we've got a lot to learn from it.
The executive producer credits speak really well to that. Kevin Feige, Jon Favreau, James Gunn. Gunn, who sort of the Johnny come lately to the party, but who really, I think, added an energy, an integral part because of the Guardians' connection to Thanos and the villain. But it's almost kind of a reminder of, oh yeah, Favreau was the first director of the whole thing. Favreau was there at Ground Zero. Well, you know, Whedon got way more publicity for the first Avengers, and maybe rightfully so. But that Favreau really, in addition to Feige, really has been the creative force behind the scenes.
I don't know. I'm not 100% sure. But I don't even think that Kevin Feige was in the picture when Iron Man premiered in 08. If he was, I don't think he was head of the studio. I think he was, you know, he had a role, but maybe it wasn't as big. So you're right. I mean, I think Favreau re-shepherded the whole thing into, he kind of birthed it. And without his involvement, it wouldn't have gotten off. And it's crazy to think that the guy from Swingers is now this huge mega player in Hollywood. That's hard to imagine. But
let's start getting at some of the things on the film. Some things I want to mention, just as particular things I really liked. They're not going to make my top five that we'll talk about in a little bit. But just some things I think that you talked about it being a cohesive narrative for the most part. Just a couple of things to note, how I think they really made some interesting and fascinating decisions about that. One is I absolutely loved the way it started with that scene with Hawkeye, Clint Barton's family, Jeremy Renner, a really good actor, and got a chance to act. I just love how they grounded that. I love the musical selection right after that, and just the tone and that sort of thing. You really got a great feeling of the psychological effects and trauma. I just thought that was a really, really important story.
What's really cool about that scene is as soon as they start it, we all know exactly what's going to happen, right? We all, I mean, like, within seconds, you immediately realize, uh-oh. Like, you just know that his family's going to disappear. I mean, you don't even have to question. But it still played, and it instantly reminded us of the enormity of what was lost with the snap. And it turned it away from being about superheroes into about people and families and heartache. And I think it was good to do it that way, to show it through another lens, to take the you know, the guys flying through the air and the guys swinging from branches, to take that out and for a minute show us that this is something that's affecting everybody. I think that was really well done.
Right, a way to emotionally ground a pretty fantastical movie with fantasy elements, sci-fi elements. Another way I thought they kind of tried to do that in a different way, maybe not quite as effective, but when they explained Captain Marvel, this may have also been a choice to explain why she wasn't in the movie as much, but reminding the audience several times, you know, this is happening not only on Earth, but all over. I thought that was kind of another way that story beat played out. I think, obviously, Tony with a daughter and a wife now, another part of that. In a weird way, the way that life kind of went on also, the celebrity with Hulk, even though that was a little goofy, the scenes with Scott coming to grips, Paul Rudd playing Scott Lang coming to grips with what's happened in all these years.
Well, and I loved that his daughter's now 5 years older, And he, you know, not you realize that for him at least, it's not just about the people I've lost, it's the time that I'm not going to get back.
Right.
With this daughter. They didn't really address at the beginning, like, if his ex-wife and boyfriend are still there or not. But that's not a major issue.
Right. So, at the same time, though, that there are some places where the movie maybe missed a couple of things, I think. So this may be getting into a little bit of picking nits with the movie. I already mentioned, I felt like Captain Marvel was a very flat character in this film. After so much hype given the post-credits scene in Infinity War, after her movie that came out just a month or so ago, I just didn't, felt more like a plot device than something really moving the narrative forward.
Well, and, you know, it was weird because on one hand, like at the very beginning, when Black Widow is doing her, I guess, weekly meeting or whatever it is, and checking in with everybody to see what the status is of various things that they're trying to do, she reported in that she's supposed to. But then when they decide to go back in time and do all this stuff, they either can't contact her or they don't contact her. She's not involved in this plan. And, it's just, I know why she's not, because I think she's a very difficult character to incorporate into these other worlds, and also a very difficult character to write, because you don't know where the limits are. Like, what's her weakness? It's kind of like the Superman paradox, where the character is so overwhelming, where's the tension? So I think that's part of the reason why, but it just seemed odd that she felt like an integral part of the team here, and then here she's not called on when their biggest mission that they're ever going to do is taking fruition.
And logistically, too, these scenes were likely filmed before the Captain Marvel movie was. And so,
I think so
they didn't have a full depth and understanding of the character. That movie wasn't shot and put together. So going back, it was great in the beginning how things were very grounded and felt very real. In fact, I would argue, we talked in our preview episode about Thor and his character arc, totally wrong about what happened to Thor. But we also, you know, knew that there was criticism out there that people weren't happy about the way Thor ended up in terms of giving up kingship.
I don't get that.
I thought that was very earned, and I loved his character arc, and I think one of the reasons I did was because he was the only one where his coming on the other side of the grief and trauma these heroes suffered felt fully earned. I guess with Iron Man and Cap, you could make that argument too. But some of the scenes, while touching at the end, showing people reuniting and that sort of thing, I'm thinking particularly of Peter seeing Ned. But it was a little odd, though, you think at the same time, like, all these people lost 5 years of their life, and suddenly it's just like, oh, we're happy to see each other, and that sort of thing. And that felt a little, you know, glossing over some things.
Yeah.
I understand why, but that felt a little odd to me.
I'm hopeful the next movies will address some of that.
Before we get to top five, one other thing, not really nitpick, but there are probably some things that, let's say, a director's commentary are going to be helpful. The time travel, I admirable. I want to give props that they tried to explain it in some way. And also to say, you can't think about any time travel in any movie. We know this. You'll just lose your mind. Try not to obsess over it. But it was sort of confusing in some places, particularly things that happen with Loki and the Tesseract, things that happen with Gamora, things that happen with Cap at the very end.
Black Widow's confusing because they've already announced and supposedly hired a director for a Black Widow solo movie. You just wonder what's that going to look like. But I am even more curious now to know what the movie after Far From Home, like what are their movies next year? Like, what movies are coming out? Because they have dates, but they haven't made announcements yet. I think once they start doing that, we'll start to get an idea of where they're going from here.
Right. I think also one last place director's commentary would be helpful is on the audio stinger at the very end. People were so pissed that there was no post-credits scene. They're like, worst post-credits thing ever. And it does say a lot about, I think, our culture, that after sitting through a 3-hour movie that was incredibly well-paced for a 3-hour movie, that was super indulgent, everything a fan could want without also being kind of overwrought anywhere, I thought.
Yeah, I agree.
That they, you know, people were kind of upset about that. But maybe, again, a place where director's commentary could be helpful.
Yeah.
Let's go into what our own personal top fives were for these films. And mine, I have to admit, in looking at what I've put together, I've chosen some maybe that are a bit broader so I can incorporate a lot more into them. I already mentioned one. Maybe I'll start here just with an honorable mention. It just missed the cut. Thor's arc was probably number six for me in this whole thing. And I feel also I need to mention Scarlett Johansson and Karen Gillan, who played Nebula. I just thought that her performances were really good.
She's the superstar of this movie, right? I mean, she's the unsung superstar of this movie.
We talked about in our preview about who would break out and mentioned her. I think Paul Rudd also was pretty spectacular in his role as well. Really being able to, you know, a character that's been goofy but was able to stick with these big guns and that sort of thing. So I thought they were great. Don't quite make my top five, but things I really enjoyed. I will just go ahead and say what my number five was. Again, to me, it was kind of the whole thematic premise of the film. Really what the Avengers are about, what this whole film was about in so many ways, really was family. Actual family, adopted family, this idea of kind of passing things on from generation to generation. You know, Cap passing the shield on to Sam, Tony finally getting the closure he wanted with his dad, Hawkeye, we already talked about, Thor and his interactions with his mother, you know, all these people, their family comes back and being able to have that, Tony being surrounded by his family when he dies. To me, number five was just the theme of family. What was your number five?
The levels to which they were willing to bring everyone back. Like, I really, there are very few people that had any kind of a significant role in any of the previous Marvel movies that did not get at least some screen time. There were a few, but not many at all.
Yeah,
so if you played a role at all, you got a moment in the sun in this movie, and I really appreciated that.
Clark Gregg was the only notable, maybe, exception, but I think his character...
I'd say, you know, we talked about this earlier, but you could argue that Sam Jackson should have gotten a bigger role. Clark Gregg got none, and maybe should have. You could argue that you could have included Odin somehow in the movie some, but, you know, they got Natalie Portman back, which everybody would have thought that was impossible to have done based on her own public comments. So, the care they took, and obviously the care they have for these characters too, have just gone out of their way to show all phenomenal.
Yeah, and that's actually my number four in a way. I loved all the different callbacks to all the different movies. My favorite of those was the Winter Soldier callback in Captain America getting in the elevator with all the same people he was in the elevator with, and then saying "Hail Hydra." I just thought, you know, that's a callback and an Easter egg at the same time. That was my favorite part of the movie, my most kind of giddy moment until the last final battle scene. But yeah, all those callbacks, the cameos, all those sorts of things, that was just fan service at the extreme. What was your number four?
Number four, about the same time, but I loved Captain fighting himself. Loved it. And I loved how they framed it, whereas Event 2012 Captain just assumes this is Loki. That perfect. I mean, it explains it well. It, you know, it just gives a perfect reason why he wouldn't lose his mind that he's fighting himself. So, that was phenomenal for me.
That was great. I also liked, even those callbacks, and this may overlap in some way with my number four, but my number three were all the different Easter eggs. The way that these movies gave also some shout-outs to fans of the comics, devoted followers of the comics. In 1970, you saw Ant-Man's original helmet. The Hail Hydra from Cap refers to controversy from a couple of years ago when Cap said that in the comics and people lost their minds. So many of those kind of Easter egg comic book moments. Sam getting the shield is one as well at the end. One of my other favorites, though, is that a couple of years ago, too, Captain Marvel sort of founded a Avengers team that was all females. And to me, that was an Easter egg when, in the final battle, all the female Avengers come and help her get the glove, at least close to the time machine and Luis's van, to try to prevent Thanos from winning. I think that scene is going to really capture the imagination of a lot of people, and is really going to be one of those that when people, you know, pirate things on YouTube, that scene's going to be looked at a whole lot by folks. That's going to be kind of a favorite moment, or an enduring moment for a lot of people. What's your number three?
Well, just Ant-Man in general. Because I love when he shows up and he goes, "That's America's ass." Love that.
Also, in itself, an Easter egg, because that was a meme.
And then when he says something like, "I can't, do I call you Captain, Mr. America?" Like, what do I... Loved it. To me, one thing this movie did, and a lot of people were asking where Ant-Man was in Infinity War, right? I mean, yeah, a lot of people were. This movie, he more than made up for it, and I think... I don't think he was the MVP of the movie. I think that was probably Karen Gillian for me. And she's the one that did the best, just elevated herself to another level. But I do think the Ant-Man character has, if they make a third Ant-Man movie, which I don't know if they will or not, but that character has just grown and grown and has a following now that the first two movies probably didn't marry.
My number two, though, I mentioned my most giddy moment was Captain America in the elevator. Until this one. And I knew it was coming because I knew about the leaked footage, but it was still awesome. And Cap picks up Thor's hammer. Cap picks up Mjolnir.
You know what the best part of that was? One of the best parts of that, when Captain throws the hammer, right? And then you cut to Thor, and Thor goes, "I knew it!"
That was awesome, yeah. That was
really cool. Because that calls back to that post-credit scene when they're in the party and they're trying to pick up the hammer and Thor and Captain can't pick it up, and they're like, "Oh, it's so good."
What is your number two favorite moment?
I really liked Captain dancing with Peggy Carter in whatever decade that was. I really liked that. And I just like that being the way everything ends. I love that.
Yeah, that last dance that we were hoping for in a time travel movie, that you know, just late, you know, that kind of is cool.
Well, and every one of the characters that we love the most, it feels like every one of them comes either from not broken home, but they all have issues with family, right? Because
mm-hmm.
Captain is he has no family, but he's in love with it, you know, wants to create a family with her. Of Tony, he's obviously got issues with his dad, and then, you know, Star-Lord, issues with his dad, Thor, issues with his dad, you know, and in this movie, he's crying over his mommy the whole time, and so it's just, and I think what that shows us is that despite all their other issues, that they struggle with the same sort of, like, relationship issues that we do, and that's what resonates with everyone.
Well, my number one feels really, really obvious, but I just don't see how it could not be number one. Is just what the best moment in the movie is. I am inevitable, and I am Iron Man.
I get chills about it. That was exactly what I was going to say. Just because it feels so, and I don't think we can even talk about how great a job Josh Brolin did to sell that and to make that work, right? Because, you know, he said it earlier in the movie, but he goes, "I am inevitable." Snap, and this look on his face of like, "What the hell is happening?"
Right.
And Tony goes, "Yeah, but I am." Oh, it's just.
Yeah, Josh Brolin really made it. Robert Downey Jr. made it. You said Karen Gillan. Robert Downey Jr. was my person who won this movie.
Because, That goes without saying that Robert Downey Jr. is going to be incredible. I mean, I don't, you know what I'm saying? I mean it in the sense of, like, Karen Gillian elevated her stock to a degree. Right. Robert Downey Jr. couldn't have gotten any more valuable, right?
Oh, I think,
he's already
your
MVP.
I think he really did. I thought he was just amazing. That moment, I kind of think of it as this. You know, again, I mentioned the YouTube. People are going to go put clips on YouTube and that sort of thing. It's this kind of movie. I've thought so much about it since I saw it. I've gone on YouTube a lot and seen illegal footage, you know, that hasn't been taken down yet by Disney and Marvel. When I go and look at this stuff, what's going to happen is I'm probably going to go to the scenes with Cap and the hammer first. Saying on your left, Cap getting the hammer and saying Avengers Assemble. But
that's
I'm
fantastic.
always going to be, and now I got to watch I Am Iron Man. And I don't think I'll do that in reverse. It's not like I'm going to go see, well, I want to see the I Am Iron Man, and then I'll see all the other stuff. It's like once you see that, there's nowhere higher to go from that point. And the emotional impact of that and everything. You know, it's just, you knew it was coming, you knew it was happening that way all along, but still it surprises and gets you, and it's just amazing. It's a line, it's a moment, it's all of that. We'll need to, again, with time, we've gone a little long, we're going to need to stop here, and so, Brian, we've actually bought ourselves one more episode, at least, to talk a little bit more about how you feel about the completion of this journey. So, listeners, still, you can follow along. Tell us what you thought about Avengers Endgame by going to Twitter at 10kmovies or on Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. And next time that we talk to you, we will be talking about the end game of Brian's journey and what comes next for him as well. So until then, we hope your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline.